Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Now are you ready?
Portugal gossip, yeah?
Loads of it.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon once again, and at great personal sacrifice in the case of JB and Phil. I just want to say, fair play, lads.
Yeah.
Fair play.
The stuff we went through. Did you get powdered pepper on your eggs?
Did I have powdered pepper? Yeah, powdered pepper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the stuff we went through was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
No, genuinely, to be sat here on a Sunday night making sure that there is a fix of rugby on a Monday morning after you've just caned it in Lisbon for 48 eventful hours, which I'm sure we'll hear all about. That's the lengths we go to. That's how important it is that the podcast is there for you every Monday
Absolutely
morning.
Absolutely vital. Yeah. Vital.
Yeah, we were only actually in Lisbon for about 40 hours.
Yeah, we went there.
36 hours or so.
Like, how long have you been here? And look at the watch and go, 10 hours? When you're leaving? 8 hours. Two nights.
Well, if you...
It was good.
I fully appreciate the sacrifice and the effort you've gone to just to make sure this podcast happens. If you appreciate it as well, then you can repay JB and Phil for their engine that they're demonstrating right now by going and hitting subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, by leaving a 5-star review, or by going to patreon.com/eggchasers. Come on, let's get some gossip from Lisbon then. How was it? I've not been.
Good city. Good city. Small. Not a Barcelona, not a Madrid, but a lot of fun.
But small in the sense that you could be there for a short period of time and kind of feel like you...
So we saw a lot of the city. You could walk across it quite easily.
Sounds a bit like Manchester then, scale-wise.
Was it even smaller?
Yeah,
considerably smaller.
Yeah,
I'd say so.
I assume. Yeah, I have no idea what the population is, but it did feel, and it's generally quite low rise as well. There's a few rooftop bars, but nothing.
I mean, we only went to 5.
Maybe
that just
5.
Means you get good views at the rooftop bars.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Nothing more than about 8 stories, or very little more than about eight stories.
Is that enough altitude to drink at?
Yeah, we feel so.
Yeah, and it's quite hilly as well, so you're on a hill.
Yeah.
You're 8 stories up on a hill.
So
that
we did three on the first night, maybe another 2 the next night. One called Park, it's got a beautiful view of the bridge.
Park was good fun, wasn't it?
Absolutely stunning.
And what about the local drinks? What did you have?
We tried to avoid Super Bock.
we did end up having
Do
a bit
know what?
Of
we didn't Bock. Have any ports.
Oh, there was the,
we
the,
didn't
the
have port, Porto Tonico.
Porto Tonico, yeah.
No, we didn't have any of that.
I don't know how
we did have quite a lot of Vino Verde.
Lots of Vino Verde.
Excellent.
And just lots of beer and white wine and bit of everything.
Bit of everything, yeah.
And was there any much appetite for rugby?
There wasn't the Irish bar.
Good.
Absolutely rammed, yeah. So we bumped into...
Of expats or... locals as well?
A lot of French people
in the
bar that we watched the game in. It was probably 50% French, then a load of Irish.
The French were brilliant.
Lads.
The French were really, really good company.
They were great fun.
And as were the Irish fellas, to be fair.
Yeah,
the Irish fellas,
they were awesome.
Had a few beers with
Tony as well.
Big Tone?
Yeah. Big Tone.
Swiss Tone. Portuguese Tony.
Travelling around... The world, Europe.
One of our
long-time listeners who met up with you in Lisbon. I wouldn't mind just swapping lives with Tony for a couple of months.
I know.
Sounds amazing.
Loves it.
It's class.
It's nice. Sometimes it's good just to meet up with a fellow rugby fan and really gnaws out on the construction of Leicester Tigers' squad for next year. Really get into the weeds.
In a way, if you were there for such a short period of time, I mean, you would have loved to have seen Portugal play in the Rugby Europe really Championship.
We would have done.
It would have condensed your visit even more.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, when we went there, an interesting thing was two Portuguese people asked us if we were here to see Six Nations.
Mm.
So the lady on the counter...
At the hotel?
Yeah. She immediately asked Six Nations, and the next receptionist came on, the guy... played on the wing for somebody.
Yeah, he played a Portuguese chap who played a bit of rugby when he was younger.
Yeah, it would have been very good to get a little bit more involved in the local Portuguese rugby, see what they're up to. But, you know, time constraints and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next time we go, it'll be for maybe like 3 or 4 days and we can find a local team to turn out for.
Yes.
On the Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. That'll be quite fun.
In fact, any offers like local teams?
We did.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute tear up on Friday, as you would expect.
Yeah.
And we stayed true to our word, got up, went for a 7 kilometre run.
Well done.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was just going to be big talk.
All up here.
No, we did it.
I'm impressed.
Managed it.
Crawled out of bed. Phone, no bank card.
Well done.
Obviously. Standard.
Yeah, JB lost his phone and
standard,
bank card.
Yeah, standard continental fare. Do you know what? Next time I go overseas... literally, I land. I'm going to throw my phone on the tarmac. Don't need this.
I'm not looking forward to it. So I obviously paid for everything then from whatever time you lost your card at say 10 o'clock on Friday night through to today, including our sushi treat that we had when we landed back in the UK.
Yeah,
I'm not looking forward to looking at my bank statement.
No, I'm not looking forward to getting the bill
this week. Yeah. Well, you'll never know. I'll sort it out. Don't worry.
Excellent. It was very, very good fun.
Well done.
Yeah.
Good effort.
Any other highlights? We had the worst croquettes I've ever had.
They were bad. Oh, and that's
we had to send them back. That was in a rooftop bar. Yeah. We refused to pay for them.
How
they were that bad.
Croquettes wrong?
Croquettes are one of my favourite things. Every time I go to the Iberian Peninsula, I just want more and more croquettes. So we ordered something, quite a nice rooftop bar, and they were awful, inedible.
Yes.
I wouldn't feed them to, like, a gerbil.
Yeah, I wouldn't let my Labrador eat those.
Rudy's got much better taste than that.
Exactly. Now, obviously everything was going fine in Portugal. Where did you watch the game, Tim? Where did you watch the games?
I watched some in delay because I went out paddleboarding.
Oh, Supping, were we?
Supping, I know.
Where was that?
Windermere.
Nice.
Lovely.
So
I watched some of them in catch up and then I watched the France game at home. I had some friends staying.
Ah, very nice. I was going to ask, how dark was the mood after the England game?
Well, not too bad. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll get there. We'll get there for sure. But there is, let's be honest, there is only one place to start. And it's not an advert for whatever that is.
It's
Barrymore's advertising. I don't know, a YouTube advert, but.
Josh Adams non è particolarmente persuaso da questa decisione, anche se è considerato il play.
That's Josh Adams getting awarded player of the match, man of the match.
Well done. I'm loving this already.
Che il player of the match per una volta vada.
Oh, is this in Italian?
Yeah. Here's the line out.
Oh, this is going to be incredible, isn't it? No. La palla da. Really, it builds.
Kieran Hardy about to do a box kick.
Go on, box kick it, boys.
This kick chase.
Lazy kick chase. You're not a winger. If you can't chase a ball, you're not a winger.
There you go. Kick halfway. Oh, on their own 10-metre line. Padovani to Capuazzo.
Capuazzo! Capuazzo!
Yes! There we go, boys!
Brilliant.
Awesome.
You know, like...
That is class.
That whole game... I'm so glad they lost that game. I'm so happy that they lost it. Because we watched it, and it wasn't high quality, was it? Wales took them for granted. Well, Owen Watkins, scored his try.
And the Adams try.
Stalling it in.
So easy, yeah.
Half-arsing it. Don't chase your kick. Good. Get what's coming.
I watched back that kick chase. That was awful. There's like five forwards just ambling forwards. Only a couple of people in the line. Josh Adams misses a tackle on Capozzo.
He can shift.
God, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's such a talented player. He's so exciting to have him. Like the second coming of Menozzi, before Menozzi's even
good
finished. Yeah. He is the real deal.
Garbisi's face when he kicked the diversion. Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like one of those iconic sporting moments.
Yeah.
But you know, even though it's a crowd in the Welsh game, I mean, they didn't take it. They went, and there's nothing wrong with this, by the way. They obviously went for a little day out on the beers. You know, it wasn't a tense match. They were all
there for Alan Wynne-Jones and to see a procession Welsh victory.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. There wasn't the expectation of a real game, so serves them all right.
Beautiful sunshine, get some beers down. You cheer on Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah. By the way,
away we go.
Have you seen the list of Alan Wynne-Jones's milestones and the games that he's played on those milestones? Like, I'm sure he's lost on his debut, his 100th cap, his 50th cap, injured on Lions tour, now on his 150th cap. Every time he does something big, something bad happens.
Yeah, that was a bad day for him. And unfortunately for him, like, an absolute warrior, legend, one of the greats, he did not have a good game.
Yeah, I was going to say, he wasn't on the weekend. You can only judge him by, you know, how he plays and how good his last game was.
Yeah, he's a great leader, but is it time to call it a day on the Alan Wynne-Jones? Because you can see that Pivic and Alan Wynne have got one eye on the World Cup next year. It's 18 months away. Is that too far?
It's 18 months away? Is it not this year?
It is 18 months away.
Is the year after?
23.
I think Alan Wynne-Jones, it's a weird one, because I think just pick your best 15 generally, but I can understand the sentimentality and going, we want to give him his 150th cap at home in front of a full stadium while we can. And so I totally get that, but it maybe is symptomatic of the attitude that Wales had going into maybe it. Is it in that they were, because those two second rows last week played really well.
Yeah, and also maybe the treatment of Sergio Parisi would be a better way to look at it rather than the treatment of Alan Wynne-Jones.
Anyway, I'm glad it puts to bed. As I've always said, Italy shouldn't face any relegation.
No, exactly.
Wales maybe.
Wales
should be.
Get him out.
No, I'm actually with Sam Warburton on this. I still think the principle of giving an aspiration for teams below, but I am delighted to see Italy chalking up a win. Their first in 37 games.
Just on the Alan Wynne-Jones thing, right, and his age. It's my opinion, at least, that I don't think age necessarily makes you a worse player. It does make you a less consistent player. I think that's the difference. You could trot him out tomorrow for a big game and you'd still play him, because there's a chance you'll get Alan Wynne-Jones at his peak. But I think to turn in performances week in, week out at that age then becomes very, very difficult. I don't think it's possible.
That's part of the problem for him as well, that he's not playing week in, week out.
Yeah.
He's had some bad injuries and he's almost being rushed back, like in the Lions tour, like now, rushed back to play, which doesn't seem right.
You'd have to have one hell of a training methodology to be able to gauge how good Alan Wynne-Jones is at the moment without the red hot fire of competition in, say, the Premiership, or, you know, imagine if there was some good rugby in Wales to be played at club level. But because you don't see it, the only time you get to know if he's declining or improving or whatever he's doing is in an international
equally game. I do think he's got enough experience under his belt that he knows how to get himself in the right shape. I think the point,
yeah, but he'll always sort of tell himself, won't he? He'll always tell himself, I can do it.
I guess that's true. Mm. But then you look at Johnny Sexton, he hardly plays for Leinster and they keep him in cotton wool. And maybe that is the way to go. Different players work in different ways. But I do think on this particular occasion, I totally understand the sentimentality, but the two second rows last week played very well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably Wales, it's only in hindsight, it's always 2020, but had it come into them if they're making selections on sentimentality Six Nations game.
We're making it sound a little bit like it is Alan Wynne-Jones' loss.
No.
He didn't play great, but he's not the reason that they lost.
No.
It just happens to be his 50th cap, and that's the talking point.
Yeah, he'd been off the pitch for 20 minutes when they lost it.
I mean, Dan Biggar, not pulling his punches.
I saw that.
Fantastic. I mean, I love Dan Biggar. I love
what
that
did he
man.
Say?
He said, That was a last chance for that will have been the last chance for a good number of players.
Yeah,
and he said, "We've said that in the huddle just there, So that's pretty brutal.
So boys, guess I won't be seeing you guys around.
Yeah.
What do they do with those lads then? Are they allowed to leave Wales now to go to play in the Premiership? Like, what happens to them?
Glue factory.
Yeah. I agree with him. I think the changes should have been made a while ago, because this Welsh team is very much a mixture of the old Gatland legends and some new guys mixed in. It doesn't feel like it's got its own real identity, other than they're very hard to beat on occasions. That's it. But then very easy to beat on other occasions.
Part of the problem is the transition from the old to the new has been accelerated by the fact that most of the old guard, Gatland's boys, were either unavailable for the whole Six Nations or certainly the start of it, like Alan Wynne-Jones, like Ken Owens, like Faletau missed the first bit, like George North, as examples.
Yeah, one of the reasons I've been very down on Wales, and have been for a few years now, is when Pivic was doing wonders with the Scarlets, and they played beautiful rugby. I mean, really beautiful. You could say that it was some of the most attractive rugby in the Northern Hemisphere.
They played great when because they didn't win it, did they?
Pro 14.
Did they win that?
Super Rugby Championship Cup. Rainbow. They won something like that. But they played amazing rugby. And I just think it's very strange that Pivic's in charge of Wales. And now, it could be that he's an incredibly flexible coach and will play one way with one set of players, another way with another set of players. But ostensibly, as he can pick all the same players, that wouldn't make much sense either. So I do wonder what is going on and what the influences are for the Wales team to make them play the way that they do.
Well, kind of on this, I should have said thank you to Patrick Burke for sending me the email link to that Italian commentary. Fantastic stuff. And contact airchasers@gmail.com. Martin Lewis, not the money-saving one.
That's a shame.
He says, hi guys, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. After watching Italy totally outplay Wales, I'm hoping, probably in vain, that this could actually save the future of Welsh rugby. For too long, the national team's success has papered over the cracks of the mismanagement of the pro game by WRU. He's an Ospreys fan and feels the union is actually working against the pro sides at times, constantly undermining them with the ever-present threat of cutting teams from 4 to 3, and then wondering why investors aren't keen to invest. Talks about the loan set up there and the pro game and the amateur game. And then he says, hoping that there'll be some change. I doubt this will happen, however. These are the same people who put a former geography teacher in charge of a £100 million company, a man who'd rather waste CBC money on a £46 million hotel project or a roof walk at the stadium than investing in the company's core product and supply chain. But yes. I can live in hope. Sorry for the long rant. I know you guys don't have a lot of interest in the URC or Welsh regions, but I wonder what you thought on this.
Well, it's true, but the reason
I want the Welsh regions to be good.
By the way, the reasons that we don't have the interest is for the exact reasons that he points out. Then that excellent email. Those are the systemic reasons it's not a good product. There was a Twitter account the other day who made a point that the Welsh Rugby Union are not run by, you know, people who'd want it run by. And I'm kind of mixed on this opinion here. So on the one hand, we all shout, wouldn't it be great if the union was to represent the players and the teams? Then on the other hand, we say, wouldn't it be great if the union was run by professionals? And I don't think you can have it both ways. You can't say we want the union to represent Welsh rugby when literally the whole board is made up of lifelong volunteers from rugby clubs up and down the country.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, say, yeah, oh, but can we just get rid of that sort of, you know, that natural diversity by replacing them with a whole management class? Well, you know. So I don't know what the answer is.
It is a tough balancing act. But I got another email, and just on this, in terms of the product as a whole, and coming off the back of Six Nations, I was going to make the exact point to a T that was made from one of our patrons, patreon.com/eggchasers, and Greg got in touch, and he said this, which I'm not even joking. When I read it, I could have written it, and it's what I was going to say on the pod. So thank you, Greg. He messaged saying, having never ever cared about Formula One or sport in general, I'm now sitting with my wife watching F1 highlights at her request. She hates Horner and just wants Haas to do well.
So many women hate Horner.
This is all down to Drive to Survive. Rugby needs a Netflix series. She was buzzing when I showed her the end of the Wales game. Imagine the narrative around Andrzej Capuozzo. Take my money. I left the house to come do the podcast. Kate was watching the F1 highlights.
Really?
Because of Drive to Survive.
The gateway to F1.
I'm not even joking. Wow. It's a game changer, and I totally agree.
I love it.
I totally agree with Greg that the Six Nations would be the perfect context in which to do a Drive to Survive type thing for rugby. You've got those national squads. You could get right in there for a seven-week period. Really get to know the players. Make some of them household names. Make some of them heroes. Make some of them villains. And get people tuning in. After all, a lot of people have said it's one of those products that is on terrestrial TV. You would have all that access added with all of those, all that connection with the actual players. So please make that happen.
So I've not seen Drive to Survive, but some of the storylines, like behind the scenes that you could get, like the Eddie Jones stuff behind the scenes could be dynamite. The Farrell and Farrell, captain of one team and the coach of the other, are warring father and son.
Well, could you imagine being the cameraman catching Marlon Yard stepping out of his car and Eddie Jones going, "How are you, mate? Tired?
Tired.
F off. Yeah. You don't want tired players." Okay. Amazing. Do you know why so many women hate Christian Horner?
No.
Do you know why?
I don't know who he is. I've not seen Drive to Survive.
I didn't know any of these names before, because I haven't watched an F1 Grand Prix in like 10 years. And I'm now interested. So he's the team manager of...
Yeah, the team managers are probably the most interesting.
Team manager or team director or whatever it is of Red Bull.
Red Bull, okay.
He's married to Jerry Halliwell, Jerry Horner.
That will be the reason not many people like him, I suspect.
Really?
Well, as I understand it, and I could just be spreading... I could get sued by Christian Horner, and I don't have the legal defence fund to match him. But I think he might have... I think he might have left his wife at a certain time just after he had a kid to go marry Jerry Horner. So I don't think he goes down very well in those sort of circles, you know? Mm. The two principals are amazing.
Toto Wolff.
But you can imagine the same sort of dynamic in rugby, can't you? Alex Sanderson would be bloody box office to follow.
Yeah.
I would love...
Out of the Six Nations, who would the people come away... Being like treasures with the audience, and who would be
treasures?
The villain?
I don't know. I think
it's easy to say someone like Joe Marler, but I'm trying to think who it would be.
Of the coaches, because I think the coaches would be some of the strongest characters.
Yeah.
I definitely think that Borthwick would be awesome.
I'm talking about the Six Nations.
All of them.
It'd be Galtier. people that kind Galtier. Of love. He'd be like the Horner. They'd love to hate him, or they'd love him.
Galtier. Yeah,
people would hate Eddie Jones. He'd be the villain.
Yeah, he'd be very much the.
Galtier would be dynamite as well.
Yeah, Galtier would be dynamite.
And Eddie Jones.
Yeah, I can imagine being the sort of Haas, the Haas principal, always swearing, always throwing things around. Who would be? I think people would love Dan Bigger. I really do. Once you see the commitment and how he handles himself and the things he says, and I think he'd be pretty good. It'd be somebody like, in my experience, it'd be someone like, even though he's not playing international at the moment, but Rory McConachy, that kind of character who you don't really know, but actually once you discover, you think, oh, that is a really good bloke. Really, really good bloke.
Yeah. I quite like Genji as well. As in, like, he's quite interesting. He's a bit different and unorthodox. In a similar way to Joe Marler is different and unorthodox. I think maybe being a international prop has something to do. You've got to be a little bit unorthodox.
Ellis Genge is different, unorthodox, very interesting, and terrifying.
Yes. He is interesting.
He's on the edge,
well.
Isn't he? He makes you feel that things will go very wrong for you very quickly.
Yes. He's dangerous and exciting.
Yes, that's exactly what he is. He's like driving a TVR.
Yeah.
And moving on to the England game in France then, and congratulations to France, by far the best team, and of... Grand Slams are no mean feats. That is a huge achievement.
Incredible to see him do it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just, it's also awesome to watch the French people in the bar watch them do it.
That was very good fun. So they all, after the game, they all the French guys and girls sat on the floor and were passing each other, like crowd surfing over this line of French guys and girls on the floor.
You do the rowing the boat thing.
Yeah.
But they're just passing girls and blokes, boys, and anything girls. They can find.
Yeah.
It was great. I got very badly manhandled by a 50-year-old Frenchman every time France scored points and read them right.
Did he think you were English?
Or yeah, just... and as I'm supporting France, he's giving me dead arms and all sorts. Yeah.
You were Welsh on that occasion. You were happy to declare your Welshness then.
I was fully supporting France.
Yeah. And yeah, it's funny because you asked how was the mood to Tim before. I was fairly relaxed and sanguine about it because it was expected.
Yeah, it was.
France were always going to expect this. And there was times at the game where England played some good stuff and you thought, when they got back to, was it 13-10 or 15-13
at one point? Yeah.
And you thought, there's a bit of momentum, they're doing well. When Freddie Stewart scores that try, you thought, maybe. But then France just had that cutting edge with like the Dupont try.
So, yeah, the way I thought about that game is exactly how Eddie described it in his press conference. When he was asked, where were the turning points? And he mentions, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he does mention that he thought the French might have a bit of pressure on them if they executed. Did they get held up or did they miss an opportunity?
They missed a few opportunities. France was a better team by a mile. I'm not. This isn't Sal Graves.
No,
there was two very clear knock-ons before Wales's try.
Wales's try
on the left, was it Ficou? No.
France's try, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Ficou goes in on the corner.
Yeah, Ficou goes in on the corner. There were two absolutely clear knock-ons in the build-up to that. But fine, that happens. But in the best team one, I'm not complaining about that.
He was saying that there could have been a momentum shift and France did look like they were feeling the pressure second half.
Mm.
But they came through it and that's why they're a good team.
And they are a good team. And France needed this as well because they've had these players for a good few years now. And they have, up to this point, underperformed.
Yeah.
First title in 12 years, first title since 2009 or 2010.
Yeah.
So they've been underperforming for a long period of time. 18 months out from a World Cup, they had to do it, and they have done it. Like, when the pressure's on you to win, it makes it harder.
That's when it's special.
And they have done it, yeah. Yeah.
As for how I feel about England, in answer to your question that you asked me ages ago, I'm kind of with Phil. I wasn't disappointed. I don't really have any complaints with how England played, with the result. And I would also look at it, and I know, looking at lineups is only tells part of the story, and there's much more to it than that. But honestly, what England players, aside from Maru Itoje, if he was fit, Tom Curry, but out of the 15 that were on the pitch, apart from Maru Itoje, what Englishman would you have put into the French 15?
Maybe Courts, because I'm...
Maybe Courts.
Well, so Courtney would do exactly the same job as, say, Cameron Rocky. I mean, that's literally...
Yeah,
or
Jalonge, a jumping...
Yeah, okay, so maybe two in the pack.
But maybe even him, because we've just named two amazing players.
Two world-class players.
Two players
I do think I would have Big Courts and Maro ahead of the 6 and 7, French's 6 and 7. I think they're Cross and Jalonge. I think that's where England have an edge. But other than that, yeah, no one. Genge had a bye as well.
Maybe Genge had a bye, but buys, but yeah. It's just awesome.
We've got to say, are we saying that because they're not playing well? If they were in a winning team, might you just reverse it and say, actually, yeah, you wouldn't have any of the French players in because they've not beaten England?
Possibly.
I think it is hard to split those. But we've got, if you look at the England team, we've got players in there who have won multiple European titles, like Maro, like Jamie George. Did Daly win multiple? Depends when he went across to Saracens. But
good enough.
But the point being, we've got enough game tape on all of these guys to know how good they are.
Yeah.
And I think we can objectively say there are very, very few.
A couple of years, and there you'd say Johnny May would have been on one wing.
Yep.
Because he was right up there.
But that was because they were winning and France were losing. Teddy Thomas is better.
No, it's because Johnny May was objectively incredible.
He was the best winger in the world for a period of time.
Him and Colby were the two best wingers in the world.
I think Teddy Thomas shaded him even at his best.
Well, maybe.
I, I don't think so. I think the running game, Teddy Thomas, is even better than Johnny May. But Johnny May, what made him the best in the world was he was arguably the best in the world under the high ball for a period of time, which he went from being erratic but super talented when he was in his early 20s to being super talented and rock solid dependable.
So I guess my point is, maybe part of it is form. I do get that. However, I think generally speaking, you can say there are very, very few English players you would substitute into the French team. And add on top of that, some of the guys that would retain the shirt if you were to come up with a combined team are the best player in the world in their position.
In their position.
And in some very, very important positions as well.
I think Slade would be one of the guys you'd retain. But only in... I mean, he's a classic example. You wouldn't probably retain him now, but if he started playing well and he was in that team, then you'd think he'd be looking like one of the best players on the planet.
Marchant, Slade... Smith, Slade, Marchant ended the South Africa victory in the autumn, and when they've played together in the last couple of games, they've looked really good.
Yeah. Marchant looks great. He's playing really well. And this was... Although they only scored the one try, which was from a good strike move off a line-out with Marchant going through the middle, they did play some of their better attacking rugby in this game. It's still not up to scratch. This is the problem. Yeah. And that is a nice combo, Smith, Slade, Marchant.
And Slade was getting Smith into space in the way that we saw in the autumn a little bit.
Just on that, right, so everyone is talking in the press about firing Eddie. I'm kind of there. That he certainly shouldn't be in charge. But in a way, you're kind of looking at it the wrong way, I think. Well, certainly people think they should fire Eddie immediately. Because, of course, it isn't Eddie Jones' team. The reason he should be fired is not because of the coaching decisions he's made, but because of the continual coaching appointments. I mean, they must be on their fifth attack coach now?
Probably more. I think,
And it's no wonder they can't attack. Attacking, you know, the fluidity in attack isn't an accident just through the sheer brilliance of your players. It's from months and months and hours of hard work and training getting used to combinations.
Had England played well and had a win against Scotland, I know it's all shoulda, coulda, woulda, then I wouldn't be unhappy with the Six Nations.
I think you've always got
the Scotland one was the one that really annoyed me because
Scotland was annoying, and it's the attack for me.
Yeah.
Now I wouldn't fire Eddie now. I would keep him.
I wouldn't fire Eddie now because it's expensive.
And you've got, even if money was no object, I wouldn't fire him, because what can you do between now and a World Cup?
Who's available?
Razzie Erasmus took over South Africa in a similar time frame. And if Warren Gatland was ready to go, then I could understand, actually, I could understand it. I'm actually not clamouring for it like many in the media are, but...
I think Borthwick would be my...
Borthwick... Or Baxter would be the two.
Baxter gets the right to refuse it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he does, because I would like to appoint Borthwick. The other one...
Could you imagine if Leicester, Borthwick, get like 2 good years of Borthwick and then he's gone?
Skivington?
I
mean, that's a hell of a
That's a jump.
But
he's done some good stuff in a short space
Skivington
of time.
Skivington, Borthwick. A line-out focused forwards... coach as your head coach.
How many international coaches have been so early in their career and done well? Andy Farrell is only looking good now, but as I keep pointing out, there are Ireland fans that are saying how good Andy Farrell is now, who were desperate for him to be fired a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a weird one, Andy Farrell. I mean, he's obviously very well supported by his union. He's got all of the resources possible. So is Eddie. You know, so I think Andy Farrell's doing a pretty good job now, from not starting particularly strongly to actually doing, he's pretty good.
My point being, actually, I mean, and even though Andy Farrell was quite early, relatively, in his coaching career, he'd still worked at British and Irish Lions, worked at international setups, defence coach.
But in fairness, not a fancy pick. I remember when they made him, because he'd failed so badly.
And Joe Schmidt had been so good.
Yeah. He failed so badly with the Lancaster crew. He's obviously tarred with that World Cup loss, as was Mike Catt. And then he picks up the Ireland job. Yeah, he's really bounced back.
I guess the point I was making is saying, "Oh, I want Borthwick for England." I can see that, but it's international rugby's. There's very, very few people that have that little. I know Borthwick's been in the international squad now. I think about it. Like,
he was with England. He was with Japan before that.
Yeah, actually, that's a fair point. I'll take that back.
So you just talking about. I always think about it like this, and Premiership clubs do this all the time, is they just reappoint the same old faces over and over again, and they get confused as to why the results aren't changing.
Premier League football is the worst.
Neil Warnock, what's he doing?
Yeah. And then we'll get Allardyce, 6 months for Allardyce.
And then what's his face? Roy Hodgson.
Steve Bruce.
Remember, it used to be Dave Bassett and Harry Redknapp.
Exactly. Yeah. So they just retread the same guys over and over again. And when you do something absolutely insane, like fire... What did Gloucester get rid of? Like 30 years worth of experience. Your director of rugby goes, your super...
Humphreys and... Ackerman.
And did Ackerman come with a super rugby title? If he didn't, he certainly went to a few finals.
Yeah, he took Lions to a final. I don't think they won. I think they lost.
They did. You get all those guys, you fire them, and then you get Skivington, and you get...
Waldock.
Waldock as defence coach, and they light it up.
Yeah.
So there's loads of talent... out there. I think the next recruitment process has got to be very, very thorough. To catch those sort of candidates.
It is actually, it feels like a bit of a shift, because I remember the conversations when Lancaster was appointed as to who were the eligible English coaches, because it came on the back of the Brian Ashton years and the Andy Robinson year and the Martin Johnson years, which were not good years for English rugby,
no.
The RFU, or if you were an England fan. But at that point, when Lancaster got appointed, and even when Eddie Jones got appointed, it wasn't like there was a Borthwick, an Andy Farrell, a Skivington, a Baxter at that stage. Those guys just didn't exist.
Yeah.
So England do now have options of talented English people with both high level experience, DOR roles, and also international experience.
Yeah, and the two which are very interesting for the attacking role. I would say Dave Walder, although Newcastle are not really.
Yeah. You
know, his attack blows hot and cold. The other one, this is a. It's hard to say, but you know, I think Sam Vesti would be very, very good.
He's highly rated.
Mm. He is. I think this is a moot point, though, because none of this is happening.
Oh, hang on. They might fire the coaches. They might not, but not Eddie Jones.
Eddie Jones isn't going anywhere.
Eddie Jones. No. So it's a really weird one with Eddie Jones. I have spoke to. What else is his name? What else is his name at the RFU?
Bill Sweeney,
right?
Formerly of the RFU. Was he still there? He's still there.
And I think it's weird because just my take on Bill Sweeney is a guy who doesn't mince his words. He is very, very direct, but also sort of quite loyal. I think he strikes me as quite straight shooting. And I can't for the life of me work out why he decided to keep Eddie Jones when he had that break in his contract. Purely just for the monetary point of view. Like, the union doesn't have a load of cash because of things, lots of things. You've got this really expensive coach. You've got a break clause. You can say goodbye, you know, without any real consequence. You've got loads of people. I mean, the idea that the English coaching job is paid so much, I get it if you want the best coach from around the world. But actually, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference between him and someone who is in the England system now.
You understand market forces, mate. That's just what happens.
How much would I need to pay you to coach England, Tim? Not how much would you like to get paid, because I would like to get paid as much as possible to coach
England.
How
much would you need to pay me? Oh, to be the England coach, I'd do it for less than I'm being paid for my job now.
Like, you know, do you think Borthwick...
But I'm an Englishman.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're going to get an expensive foreign coach, that's absolutely fine. I'm all for that if you want to do it. But you could save some money and get a really good English coach who would probably do it for half the price.
Yeah. Well, we know where we are. It's not happening, is it? So
no, it's not. They can't afford to do it.
It's not happening before the World Cup.
They can't afford to do it.
They wouldn't do it anyway. I'm not that bothered about that. I'm not getting as het up as many other people are just now.
But it's funny because England obviously finished third, which if you say England finished third, that's not a terrible result. But it's the gulf. There are two good teams in the tournament. Ireland are a great team. France are a brilliant team. Everyone else is like also runs. England will come out of this wholly disappointed. Scotland, after beating England, they look great. And then they'll come out of this whole tournament wholly disappointed. Yeah. Wales, it's a disaster. Italy, even though they finished last, they won the first game in 37. So they'll have some positives, and they've got some talent. They've played some nice stuff. So it's, yeah, the gulf between where France and Ireland are compared to where everyone else is massive.
Yeah, and it's not entirely surprising. As much as everyone says England have this have a huge player pool and should be doing much better, blah, 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 I get that. However, some good points made on some of the emails. Matt in Cornwall, Matt Stevens, contacttechchasers@gmail.com, says, all right, chaps, am I right in thinking England finished the game with zero flankers and wingers on the field? These used to be positions of strength. Where are the wings and flankers? I realise there are injuries, but England's strength in depth, ? It makes a very good point. A couple of years ago, I mean, who are the players that you would say, oh, England, if they don't have any wingers and flankers, oh, you get them in straight away? There's not many. Alfie Barbary, maybe, but he hasn't started a test match.
Yeah, he's not even been in a squad yet. Well, he's been in the wider squad.
But wingers, Adam Radwan's been around, and I think he's exciting, but I also don't necessarily think he would... He's ready to, you know, go up against France.
But you don't
France.
Know, do you? That's the thing. Unless you give him... I mean, if Adam Radwan was Welsh, he'd be...
But take the 20, point. 20 caps more. Take the point. As much as you say, oh, England player pool, is there really the player pool that everyone's saying?
This is the problem with England, right? You only get a shot at England if you are absolutely world class, right? That's the only way. Because they would develop you in Wales because they don't... It's to your point, isn't it, about the Scottish back row? Oh, we've got three flankers, awesome. We've got a back row now.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works. Those three flankers wouldn't get a look in. They probably wouldn't.
Hamish Watson might. Jamie Ritchie, probably not. I mean,
Watson's amazing. Watson is amazing. He's played international. Everyone loves him. Everyone recognises him.
Matt Ferguson wouldn't be starting eight for England.
No. I mean, do you think Hamish Watson coming through an academy in England stands out at 6 foot two? At 6 foot two... you know, back row in the Premiership. Who cares?
He'd have a shot. He's that good. Well, he would.
I think he'd have a shot. He'd be like Sam Simmons. Everyone would be like, well, why is he not in the team? He'd be in and out. He would have a good 30 caps less.
What? Did you see the Hamish Watson stat from this week?
The fourth Six Nations tournament in a row where he hasn't missed a tackle.
So he's made 219 successful tackles in the Six Nations since he last missed a tackle. And in the Six Nations and in Test rugby overall, including playing for the Lions, he's made 353 tackles since he missed one.
Maybe Hamish Watson's a bad example, which I use there.
Hamish Watson might.
There are other guys that I could use this argument with. Hamish Watson, maybe.
He is good enough.
Chris Harris would be a.
Chris Harris, great.
Who we've mentioned before.
Would be wonderful for England. Wonderful now. But they never got the chance.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I wanted to mention. Freddie Stewart, getting a lot of praise, and he played well. His aerial game was great. He took his try really well. We mentioned his out of position. You mentioned it particularly, JB, for the, was it Cuthbert try? Or
yes.
He was out of position for the Jalonch try. I don't know if you've seen that. He basically takes no one. He jams in between three players when Untermak breaks through down the left-hand side for the...
Oh, the Jalonch try where he sort of reaches over.
Yes.
So there were similarities, exactly as you say, with the Cuthbert try. And it would be easy for people to say, oh, that's because he was playing on the wing. But no, an international fullback against Cuthbert and opposite Jalonch.
You will find yourself as the last man if you're a fullback because you have to loop. So there is no excuse
now
there.
He may have done the textbook right thing and Wales and France may still have scored, but he actually didn't. He was in no man's land on both of those occasions.
Yes. That would be my exact point.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah.
Let me think.
And I think he played very well besides that.
Oh, 100%.
But that is a... If defences can identify that, and defences will... Sorry, if attack international attacks can identify that, he will be put in some very tough positions.
Yeah. Let's just talk about the game a second, because we've not actually touched on the game yet. I thought the two best players in the first half actually happened to be English. But they were...
Let me guess. Will Stewart and Ellis Genge.
Ellis Genge was one, yes. Will Stewart did have a good game. No, I thought Nick Azikwe was brilliant in the first half. Well, every time he made an intervention on the ruck or in the line-out, he looked really, really good. And yeah, he just... I think teams do benefit from having that extra line-out option. And England, with their three line-out options, it makes a big difference.
Mm. It is useful. There was an interesting point on email from Miles Burley.
Yeah, I got that email up, actually. Yeah, go
yeah,
on.
Mentioning the lack of jacklers in the back row, the balance in the back row. While obviously having Courtney Laws, and he's a quality all-round player, he's a massive advantage in the line-out. He's not really a jacklin flanker.
Nope.
His point was, in the games where England have played France, where you've had better balance, i.e. Two jacklers, so Wilson and Curry, Wilson or Curry, England have won. When you've had a line-outs option as a six in there,
which
England
has been Laws
lost.
Every time, wearing six in 2018, 2020 and 2022.
Yes.
Defeat, when it's been Wilson, Curry in 2019 and 2021.
Yeah.
Victory.
Good.
And that's a very, very good point, that, Miles. Very well observed.
Yeah,
it is, yeah.
I mean, that is... If one of the pundits on the telly had made that point, we would be praising...
People
would be praising their punditry, and one of our listeners has emailed us that.
There we go.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Thank you, Miles.
Azikwe good, Genge excellent, but the problem with Genge was he was good. So
Genge is interesting because he was used in a way that we've never seen Genge, or really any loose head props be used.
Do you know, though, I was thinking about this. There's a few examples now of loose head props being literally the most exciting attacking player on the field. So the ones that I can think of, and I don't know if this is a trend to be continued or if it is an indictment of the team that they play for.
Right. I would say props in general, because like Tong and Thor for Australia.
Yeah.
Tuipu.
That's a good point, yes, because they're enormous explosive men.
Yeah, Tonya Tuipu.
But for the loose heads in this country, Bevan Rodd genuinely is the most exciting player when he gets the ball for sale. Like, he's doing missed passes, he's offloading. You know, he just is. It wasn't that long ago that Mako was the absolute playmaking fulcrum, because his hands are great, he can carry
wonderfully.
Now Genge's
Gethin Jenkins was always a bit of a baller.
Yeah,
Gethin Jenkins is a great show, actually.
So with Genge, he doesn't have those ball skills of Rod or
not the hands,
but he has the go forward.
His carrying is
he carries
another
like an
level. Eight. Yeah, he does.
In fact, I don't know why you don't put him at eight. Why not just don't?
He's terrifying.
He's a baby rhino.
Yeah,
but his carrying is the other person who is as good a carrier as him is Barbary, who's that like low
they're
left,
very similar, actually,
similar explosive, aggressive. Slightly, they're not like 6'5". They're a bit more compact,
cube,
low center of gravity. Yeah. Yeah, be quite fun to get Barbary on there.
Genge is what Sam Simmons should be, right?
If Sam Simmons weighed more than 90 kilos, then he'd be carrying like Genge.
I wonder what the difference is between those two boys. 10 kilos?
Between Simmons and Genge?
Yeah.
Genge probably, would be about 110.
I'd say it's probably something like 104, which is Simmons.
Genge is
and
not
Genge,
big.
And Genge is probably 114, something like that. I would guess.
Yeah, that's not a big man. I mean, it's big when you get on the shops.
It's not Uini Antonio.
It's not a big man. It's just pure
he's listed here as 121 kg, Genge.
That is
a big
man. That's getting substantial.
That's north of 19 stone.
He's not that big.
I don't think he's that
big.
That's Wikipedia. Let's see if we've got his England profile. Not that these are ever right.
They should weigh them on the day of the game. I've said this how many times?
Weighbridge.
England profile is 117. So... 18 and a half stone.
Yeah, I could go with that.
So that is pretty, I mean, that's pretty sizable.
I mean, that's very sizable, given he's what, like 5'10"?
No, it's listed as 6'1".
Can I tell you the difference?
I'm not sure he's that tall.
Maybe 6'4".
Can I tell you the difference between Ellis Genge and Sam Simmons? Why one can carry at that level and the other one doesn't carry as well, despite them, you know, they should be equally as good carriers.
Mm.
I would never ask Ellis Genge if it's okay to weigh him. It's a different beast.
Yeah, you're right.
Could I weigh you? What?
But to Miles's point in that fantastic email, the breakdown was one of the areas where France won this game.
Mm.
Eddie said that as well. Eddie said that in his post-match.
Yeah.
Why? Tell me why you think that is.
Just disrupted and slowed down England's ball.
Audrey, Jalonch, and Crow, all menaces. And then you've got Marchand, who can do the same. Wokey can get involved and do it.
Marchand's good.
Even Cyril Bailly can get in over the ball. Yeah. They can all do it.
Yeah.
And Fiku's amazing at it.
Fiku's such a good player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's only 27.
I know,
still.
I can never believe how young he is. Because he feels like he's just been around forever.
Yeah. I'm a big, big fan. When I said, why is that? I don't mean necessarily like, you know, I know the French guys are good. Did England just not look after their ball? Is it their clear outs? Is it their carries? I mean, these things are never in isolation. There's always a way to defeat it. Mm. And, you know, Eddie seemed to be of the opinion that his players did not look after the ball well enough. Which I don't know. I don't know.
Well, they didn't because they didn't get enough ball. But what was the failure that caused that?
Yes.
Could they have fought that a little bit harder in contact or on the deck? I don't know.
Well, it's not the first time he's mentioned the breakdown. He mentioned it at the start of the rebuild of this team, where he mentioned the speed that they play at. It's like 1.4 seconds or something for the ruck.
Oh, the ruck speed of France is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It's a question that, you know, do France ruck better or do England not defend as well? And what I don't like about this whole thing is if he's identified that he needs quick ball and that is his direction of travel to win games, he's either got to realise now that he doesn't have the players to win it and come up with a new strategy, or admit that he's failed to coach the team to implement that strategy or failed to pick the players to achieve that strategy.
Well, to that, I would actually say one player who makes a significant difference, I'm not saying it would have changed the result, but certainly on this point would have made a significant difference. Tom Curry is close to World 15 level.
Well, yes, he's close to World 15 level at ruining other people's breakdowns. But the guy you want, I think, to clear up actual breakdowns everywhere is somebody more like Launchbury, just an absolute mutant that runs around, clears rucks.
Mm. That's a fair point.
Yeah, you know, there's a different skill set, isn't there, between stealing a ruck and just menace.
All right. Launchbury hasn't played a lot of rugby. Tom Curry's injured, but let's say both of those are in. And who's the second row that's...
Charlie Hills.
Johnny Hill as well.
Johnny Hill, Johnny Hill's a good shot.
Johnny Hill does that job. So if you put Johnny Hill and Tom Curry in peak condition,
Mark Wilson
into that pack,
or Mark Wilson,
or someone like Mark Wilson, or whatever. You put a couple of people in peak condition into that pack, and I think I'm not saying it doesn't change the result, but but it makes a substantial difference to that particular area, which was pivotal in the game.
Yeah, and if that's what they built everything on, and they can't get that one thing right, it's like saying, you know, we're a driving lineout team and not being able to perform your lineout.
But this goes back to the supposed massive player pool, and yes, England have lots of players, but do England have lots of players at the required level? Because back row, flankers, we've already identified it, wingers, we've just identified it, and second row, we've been talking about it for ages.
I think they do. I think they really do. But I don't know what it is, they just don't. They don't seem to back the right players.
There is a problem with injuries and attrition. They can't manage their player squad in the same way that Ireland can, for example.
I mean, not to go over all ground, Will Rowlands could have played for England quite easily.
Mm.
Thomas Francis. There would need to have been some sort of simultaneous meteor strike on every Premiership rugby ground and Thomas Francis to be on holiday, right? So for Thomas Francis to play for England. And yet, here he is, at, you know, absolute world-class prop now.
Mm.
No two ways about it.
Mm.
Just back in the right, and I think because they identify his kids really early on in the English system, I'm not sure they're a massive fan of late developers either. Mm. You're either painted with the "your world class" brush, or you're not. And
Mark Wilson is one very notable exception to that.
There was another one I was thinking of. Who's the other one that's come through late?
Connor Laws started rugby late as well, didn't he?
Yeah, fairly late. Although he is the most capped English forward now, is he not?
He made his squad. England cap age like 20, didn't he, though?
Yeah, but he's only been playing rugby for like 5 years when he started that. I mean, he's got some natural talent. The fact that he's 6'7" and is just such a good all-round athlete.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're not already in the England system and they haven't identified you as someone potentially world-class, I think you really struggle to get a shout by the time that you're 25, 26.
I think there is something. There's something in that. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, well.
So, well done, France.
Well done, France, indeed.
Fantastic.
France, yeah, like you said before, they missed a few chances, but it's just how clinical they are. Those tries, the Ficou try, it was the cross, not Francois Cross, not Jalonche, and the Dupont try. That Dupont try of Aldrete just gets that half, pick up half yard, and the offload, he knows exactly where Dupont is, Dupont knows where the space is. Try time.
Yeah, Villiers. We need to talk about him for 5 minutes.
Gabriel Villiers.
This is a harsh thing to say. A player that I really do like. But Jack Noll must be looking at Villiers and thinking, that's what they think I am. Because that is exactly what we're seeing.
Poor Jack Noll.
That guy has luck.
So many injuries.
I saw him injured.
He went off after 25 minutes. Shoulder.
Do you know what it is?
I don't. Was it wrist?
Yeah, it was when he... when he went up for competing for a catch and it came down, hand was the first thing that made contact with the ground. And
So Villiers, I've been thinking, I've been giving him a lot of thought of late. Did he play scrum half at some point?
Not that I'm aware of. He might have done, because he's not an enormous bloke.
He looks to me like he's played scrum half.
Mm.
And if he has, I think he is. Do you know when you hear one player and they go, oh yeah, that's a good idea. That's going to sort of change the mould, and then others come along. So I guess originally it would have been Shane Williams, who was a scrum half, moved on to the wing. More recently it was Colmby, scrum half, moved on to the wing. Villiers looks like he's a scrum half. Whether he is or not, I don't know. But I would bet money on him playing a lot of scrum half at some point.
Yeah, he definitely could do that. He's a good player.
So
he's so deceptively strong as well.
Oh, he's so powerful. So yeah. You know, the leg driving contact and, and just the things he does, his awareness, the little the dummy to sell Marrow. I mean, Marrow reads every offensive play like a book and steals balls. And he just completely baffled him. So he'd be one paradigm breaker, Villiers. And the other one, I wonder how this will end up. But the Italian, the 12-stone Italian kid.
He wishes he was 12 stone.
Yes.
He's about 10 and a half stone.
10 and a half stone Italian kid. Like, if he has sustained success, that's really healthy for the game. Because how many kids will look at that and go, aha, that's what I need. And the agility of him.
Yeah.
Like, when he got that one-on-one.
That was awesome, that. Like, kind of just drift inside a little bit and bang, outside, I'm gone.
Yeah, you've really got to put some thought into how you use him to get him into space. I know this is like the story for everyone, really. You know, getting your good players in space. But I can't see how he plays in the England, in a France team, or in an England team, or in South Africa's team.
Well, he's going to Toulouse to fill the Cheslin Colby shaped hole that is at Toulouse.
Yes, I hope he's getting paid well for it.
I hope so.
I imagine he'll be doing all right.
He'll be doing all right.
I imagine he'll be doing okay.
He's listed here at 68 kilos, which is
68 kilos,
which is like jockey weight.
You can snatch him comfortably,
easily.
Snatch two of him. He's listed.
You can't snatch two of him. I'm
joking. I can.
Thank God you can't.
JB could
get in there. Get in there.
Yeah, 10 and a half stone. I mean,
you could clean and jerk one of him in each hand. No, you could clean him.
Clean, yeah.
You could clean two Capoezos.
I could clean him, yeah. I could clean two of them. Perfect.
One in each hand. Like, Capoezo sitting on each end of a barbell.
Awesome.
You could get him up.
Yeah,
do some curls.
I've had a thought about CrossFit this week, but I'll save it for Patreon.
Lots of people unsubscribing now.
I've had a thought about something related to the C word.
Yeah, we've had complaints.
Which again I will talk about on I'll talk about on the other podcast. I've got an idea which I'm gonna pick up the phone and talk to BT Sport about.
When you're on the phone to him, can you inform him about the updated rules for JB's Rugby Eights, which is the new tournament?
I might pick my battles.
I tell you what, Rugby Eights. If you're a Sevens tournament out there and you want to pick up JB's Rugby Eights as the experimental one, in contact.
Just on that, it is that time of year. We need to start thinking about Sevens tournaments.
Yeah, we do.
Should we get a team together again?
Yes. Yeah. If you want to join the Egg Chasers team,
we already have a WhatsApp group of the boys that were at the North Dorset Sevens, but that we're open to expanding the roster.
Generally speaking, you need to be in the Special Forces to join, but
we make exceptions.
We do make exceptions.
And we're quite happy to enter open divisions of Sevens, but we also quite like the vets. Over 35s, so...
Yes.
Well, look, we won both tournaments, didn't we? So
we won both.
Swings and roundabouts.
So we can do either.
Yeah. We won 500 quid's worth of prize money.
And the ball.
And the ball. Ball.
The trifle ball.
The trifle ball.
Which we'll be taking with us to every tournament. So if you want to join, I'll put you in touch with the team manager.
Yeah, we need to get our itinerary together.
Yeah, well, one of our wingers scores weekly in the National Leagues.
Mm.
Weekly. He carried off one of the Spanish players.
Yes.
Did he?
One of our
fantastic. Saw the picture. Yeah, brilliant.
So all good there.
Yeah. I should just say I know they got the Triple Crown, didn't get the championship, but I think Irish fans are rightly feeling very positive about their team. Scotland not so much after a very strong start against England.
Oh, Stuart Hogg.
Stuart Hogg.
So I've not watched the full game of this because JB and I had other things that we were doing for part of it. But Stuart Hogg, oh my God, that try. But what a tackle from Keenan.
Yeah, awesome.
That the brilliance of Keenan and the just poor decision-making, poor finish, poor execution, brain freeze from Stuart Hogg.
That position, I think that actually is very symbolic about Ireland. Andy Farrell and his players, they've been feeling around for what their identity is, for how they're playing, for what their personnel is. And Hugo Keenan probably is emblematic of that because he was in that 15 shirt when Rob Kearney left. They thought, right, we've got our guy. Oh, no, because it was Lama for a bit.
Yeah, Lama.
Then you had Stockdale they tried out.
Yeah, which wasn't particularly successful.
No, Stockdale wasn't successful.
It feels like so long since he's played.
Stockdale for a long time.
Been out injured. They
tried Keenan, then he was out again, and they had other people. But now they've gone, no, we've got our man. And I think that actually speaks to where Ireland are at. It's they've sort of felt their way through a trickier period and are very confident with where they're at. And
they're good for a quarter final.
They're very good for a quarter final.
I'm optimistic that Ireland will do better in quarter-final next year. I think they are a very good team.
We've gone over this same ground with Almond Jones. We'll do it with Sexton right now. Get rid of him. Go on. Got to go.
So I think
I disagree.
The long goodbyes don't work.
I think he is still playing very good rugby.
Right, let's give a list of the long goodbyes that have worked. I can think of two.
Richie McCaw and Dan Carter.
Yeah,
they won a World Cup in 2015.
Martin Johnson? Was that a long Johnson? Goodbye? No, it wasn't.
He wasn't there in 2007, was he?
No, he won it and then said, I'm done.
Yeah, him and Jason Leonard, because Jason Leonard won it in 2003.
But they didn't have 18 months of waving goodbye to everyone.
No, but Sexton, I think, is still playing some very, very good rugby.
And I don't
he was World Player of the Year 4 years ago.
And I don't think that, might be wrong on this, but I don't think McCaw or Carter announced their retirement. So they weren't saying good, you know, they weren't doing the whole procession thing, coming off early.
Has Johnny Sexton announced retirement? I mean, he will.
Yeah, he has, because he's doing the whole thing. They're bringing him off a minute early for a round of applause and all sorts. So he was waving goodbye to the Millennium Stadium, not so or whatever wherever he was a few weeks ago. It's definitely announced, yeah.
Mm, I think it is announced that he finishes after the World Cup.
Yeah, after the World Cup.
Yeah, after the World Cup.
Which is very present.
He's got another Six Nations, so why would they be going, oh, you need to get your round of applause at the Millennium Stadium?
Because home and away's. So he's home. Oh, right. Yeah, so he's away this year. He will never play at the Millennium Stadium for an Ireland jersey. So they're bringing him off a minute early. This is ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
But he is still he's still the number one fly half in Ireland.
The only long goodbyes that I'm pretty sure have actually been legitimate would be Manning winning a Super Bowl for the Broncos and Ray Lewis winning his second Super Bowl. That they're the only ones that ever worked.
And Tom Brady this year.
No, because he didn't win.
No, Tom Brady.
Oh, this year.
Next time coming around.
Tom Brady in 5 years' time.
Yeah. With another four Super Bowls.
Exactly right. So it just doesn't work, and I don't think that the second one's going to work. I think they'd be much better just moving on.
So Ireland, players I like, Hugo Keenan has made that 15 shirt his own.
Yeah.
I think Josh van der Fleer has quietly been one of the best players in the tournament.
I agree.
I think he's not getting talked up that much. I think he's been absolutely superb. And the other guy, they've kind of almost fallen into him playing, but Dan Sheehan has been
brilliant
young Leinster.
You called it straight away.
Hooker. Yeah, I'm really impressed every time I've seen him. Because he's not the biggest. He's not a Marchant type player, but he is just great. Really good all round.
I was just thinking, like, France don't even need, what's his face? The guy that's Schatt. Like, Camille Schatt. They don't even need Schatt.
Yeah, because they've got Movaca coming off the bench.
Frightening.
Yeah.
Just noticed that Italy beat Wales in the under-20s as well.
Yeah.
Well, the under-20s are winning everything, are they not? For Italy?
They beat England, Wales. Beat Scotland. They finished third. They've won three wins.
Fantastic.
In the under-20s, Ireland have won the tournament. Ireland won a Grand Slam. I've not seen much of Ireland, but there's some talent. Unsurprisingly, there's some talent coming through in Ireland.
Yeah, Ireland is a weird one because I have no issue at all with their state-sponsored sports. That's exactly what they do. It's up to them how they spend their public money. But it does strike me that everything about Irish rugby is a bit of a powerhouse. Like, even the club game, the participation, it just feels, I don't know why, when we get players over from Ireland playing in Manchester, they all seem to be of a pretty high standard now.
Mm.
It's it does seem rather promising.
Mm.
And also,
the school system's incredible.
Yeah, not only that, the knowledge of the fans. Like, I think because they don't have professional football there, you get a lot of people that just love sport who are attracted to that rather than, you know, going to watch United or something.
I love, and I'm going to Ulster in a couple of weeks.
Mm, awesome.
But I love whenever you go to, it's particularly the Republic, but you get it as well in the North. But I've mentioned it on the podcast before. You can sit and have your breakfast and read five full pages of rugby coverage in the national papers. You get
the knowledge of the Irish fans is really, really awesome. Quite awesome. So we were sat with these boys in an Irish bar, and unsurprisingly, from the Dublin area, and they just know their rugby inside out.
Yes,
you can get a real good nose.
Yeah, it was quite good fun though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Real line out chat.
Yeah.
really getting on my pedestal about how many times you should train a week and, you know, numbers to training. Real stuff.
And about how good Stuart Lancaster is.
Exactly. Yes. Right.
Well, yeah. I enjoyed them all cheering England on for that couple of hours. Normal order has now resumed.
Yeah, because Ireland, they got the fourth try bonus point as the last play of the game, didn't they? Pretty much. Which meant that they...
You missed the other massive game of the weekend. You know the massive game of the weekend.
Sedgley had an enormous win.
What happened this evening? Georgia Spain.
Georgia won big time.
Oh, did they? Oh,
big
okay.
time. Yeah, 50 points to 40 or something like that.
No.
That's slightly disappointing, but I was looking back at Rugby Euro Championship. Spain have now finished second. I think three of the last four tournaments. Spain are
getting there.
Maybe. Back to Madrid.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
That they will be... Where will Spain-Portugal be next season?
It was in Madrid this year. So that will be in Lisbon.
So we could do that one. That'd be good. Spain-Portugal in Lisbon.
Back to Lisbon.
Yeah,
why not?
We'll have a proper Tier 2 tour next year.
Yeah.
The biggest game. The biggest game of the weekend. Come on, Phil. What's the biggest game?
Widnes versus...
Not Widnes Wigan. Not the 7-3 thriller.
Talk H versus Oldham.
Yeah. Talk H, bonus point win versus Oldham.
Is this the podcast that?
Yeah.
is this the podcast that, lads?
Yes.
We've had different. I've had different issues with Oldham, and I don't like to play against Oldham because it's not gone well for me historically when I played against them.
You like to be out of the country when you play against Oldham.
When it's Oldham week.
So how did Talk H Oldham go? Should we save this for the domestic? Should we do this on the domestic podcast?
No, because we don't. There is no domestic rugby.
Yeah, we'll just do this.
Oh, there's no real domestic podcast.
Yeah, no MWDP this week.
So,
yeah, right. Good
talk
point.
H, go, get the bonus point, which means next week we can win the league if we win.
Against?
Widnes.
Yeah.
1 and 2 play each other, and they're bloody good. And they beat us in the cup. But we beat them earlier on in the year.
In the league. But yeah, that's exciting.
Win the league. So if anyone wants to come watch a great game of rugby next week, and it will be great. It will be a great, great game. Because these two teams can really play. Get down to Widnes. Have a pint. Watch this game.
Well, I'm going to say then, if you're anywhere nearby or can get to Ealing, then Ealing Trailfinders versus Cornish Pirates on Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. The table is poised with Doncaster on. Doncaster have played a game more than Ealing and Cornish Pirates. Ealing are 2 points ahead of Cornish Pirates. Whoever wins that game between Ealing and Cornish Pirates will be top of the table going into the final round of games. So it's finally poised. I know the PRL and RFU have shafted the whole momentum at the end of the season.
That could still play out in another way, but you're right.
So, yeah, if you fancy just changing things up a little bit and you want to see some full-blooded rugby...
Are they in the Menai?
No, it's at Ealing Trailfinders. At Ealing. So if I were nearby, if I was nearby there, I'd go and see the mighty Richmond. Incredibly well-coached scrum and forward pack.
Really are.
And line-out, of course.
Yeah.
The way that their coach is preserving the career of Mark Bright. Now, that's a long goodbye, which really is working out. by the way, Mark Bright followed me on Twitter.
Did
he?
Yes. Good lad. I actually, my brother takes care of some of the forward pack. I think he's actually looking after the scrum anyway. Because we mention it kind of tongue in cheek. Oh, incredibly well coached forward pack. Someone related to or good friends with the forwards coach at Richmond sent them the podcast with a little listen to this bit here this time. And then took it to the other coaches and went, check this out, lads. And my brother went, yeah, that's my brother. He was totally deflated. He thought he'd just been... I mean, it's true. The Richmond Pats are fantastically well coached. You can see that from the way they've been playing. So I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true, but...
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
It's 100% true.
So no two ways about it.
Keep going. But yeah, if you want to support some lower league rugby, and I think it is the national one coming to a crescendo as well, because you've got... Here's a tasty, like, classic match, Blackheath v Roslyn Park.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if Jonathan Mills was coaching Roslyn Park last time I checked. I don't know if he's still there.
I think they're going to be promoted to the Championship. I think they're looking like they... It's pretty finely balanced there as well, isn't it?
Coldy and Sale as well are right up there for two North West teams.
Yeah.
Interestingly.
Coldy are basically guaranteed... to go up or win that league, I think. Looking at it,
they're not.
Are they not? Were they top?
They are top.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But Roslyn Park have got a game in hand and are only 2 points behind them. So yeah, it depends. It depends how many go up and down on what happens with the league structures and all the rest of it.
Yeah, because there was some preliminary league structures passed around last week or week before, and they're all going to change again.
And there's some talk about London Scottish potentially joining URC. Or
I've heard this a million times before.
Whether they go into it being the Scottish structure, I don't know. But anyway,
yeah. I mean, London Irish still talk about this. London Irish still talk about could they link up with the IRFU and maybe borrow some of their players and help, you know, all that sort of nonsense. London Welsh was spoken about being the fourth Welsh region. There's all sorts of nonsense that goes on.
Yeah,
none of it works.
Good stuff.
Yeah, right. Is any more for any more? Any other business?
No, I want to go to bed.
Preston.
I don't think they had a game this week, did they?
No, because you read last week's results.
Yeah, so I don't think Preston had a game. But next week, Sedgley play Hull. So one plays two.
Yeah, that one.
In the league.
When?
I think it's next week.
I'm sure it's next week.
That,
I mean, yeah. That might even be more game of the week. No, that so Ealing Cornish Pirates.
Are you nuts?
If you're in the south, Ealing Cornish Pirates. If you're in the north of England, then
Talk H versus Widnes.
Sedgley Park versus Hull.
Yeah, if you're in the far, far north.
In
east,
Hull.
Or just the east.
Oh, it's in Hull.
It's in Hull.
If you're in the east, you may watch it. If you're in the northwest, you've got to watch. You've got to watch Talk H Witness. But you'll be astonished. You'll be astonished.
I'll give a little shout to the Mall Over lads. They've been suggesting, out of annoyance at the PRL decision, they've been trying to galvanise people to go and go to a local club or a lower league game at some point.
I've not seen them at Talk H yet, so it sounds like a lot of big chat.
And the Premiership product you get on the TV is incredible. So I would definitely watch BT Sport and subscribe to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you feel like going and checking out a local club, 100%
is your gateway drug, and then you want something a bit harder, then nip down to your local club.
Mm.
But talking about hard drugs, this weekend, I am astonished at the amount of attempted cocaine sales at.
It was unbelievable.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, just blokes coming up to you on the street. You want to buy some coke? No, go. No.
Were they asking in English?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the most brazen thing.
Dozens of them. I wonder if it's because dozens and dozens and dozens.
Wow.
I wonder if it's because it's been decriminalised. But then they start giving you their CV and their bona fides. Like, yeah. I'm Brazilian. So I was like, okay, Brazilian, eh? Okay. And the next guy's like, well, I'm Colombian.
Yeah.
Like, interesting. But like, if you've made the consumer decision, you do not want to buy cocaine. They're not going to change your mind.
No, most of them were pretty brazen, like shouting at you. You know, as you're walking down the street, no, go away. And then one lad in a bar, I was wearing my Lions vest because JB and I had just been for a run, and then we decided to get a few pints afterwards. Yeah. And he came up, he's like, why are you in the city? And I was like, oh, just here to watch some rugby. He's like, oh, I'm here from Colombia working. I was like, what do you do? He's like, Colombian work. okay, I've got to go.
By the sounds of it, he only asked you so that he could tell you what he does.
Yeah.
the
art of conversation is dead.
Yeah. Isn't it just? Well, very few places are that regionally specified, should I say.
Yeah.
I mean, if I said, what can I work with you? Manchester work. What is that?
You in the cotton industry?
Yeah. Where? A mill owner? Yeah. What is it you do? Colombian work.
Yeah, we all understand.
That was during the Wales. That was like 1 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. I'm wearing a vest and running shorts.
It's always time to party, according to certain people in Lisbon.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you came back.
One more thing. One more Lisbon story for you. So we met this French guy called Pierre.
Oh, Pierre was cool.
So Pierre was cool. He just sat next to us in the market before, he's the poor guy. He's deep in conversation with us. Interestingly, he's got... I can say this. He's never going to listen to this podcast.
It's unlikely
he's ever going to listen. It's going to be even more unlikely he gets this far down.
You haven't doxed him with a surname or a city.
Pierre from France.
I think that's vague enough.
So, I won't tell you that bit of the story, actually. I will say this. So, his uncle or someone who... his uncle owns a castle in the Champagne region.
Yeah. Knocks about in some good circles.
There's more going on to this Pierre fellow than we realise. And they have a champagne party, right? So all the locals bring their own boxes of champagne, and all of this champagne gets matched. So, there's a champagne for your starter, champagne
for your caviar.
And then the best one, a champagne to party. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, party champagne.
creates a party champagne. So I don't know what dictates a party champagne, but I'd love to know the tasting notes. Yeah.
Well, that's the one that...
Colombian party champagne.
Yeah. And that'll probably be the one that before the French top 14 final, when they're in their blazers and they have some champagne, they'll be having that. They'll be having that one.
Well, I assume that'd be matte champagne.
Game day champagne.
Which will have some hemo rage.
Yeah.
Pre-workout supplement.
Yeah.
Right, so that's it.
Games next week, predictions?
The return of Don Barrow in the Premiership Rugby Cup. That happened. That's good.
Yeah, that is good to see. Because he's only 28.
Yeah, he's got loads of rugby left.
Yeah. We played a little. We played before. We talked about him a few weeks back.
Did he play before?
Yeah.
He got announced about three or four weeks ago.
He came off the bench for sale.
Oh, did he?
I did not know that.
We mentioned it.
There you go. Well,
so next week's fixtures, we've got Friday night, Gloucester host Worcester.
Gloucester.
Home win.
Home win.
on Saturday, all 3 o'clock. We've got Bath hosting Sale.
Sale.
Away win.
Away win.
London Irish hosting Northampton. That'll be a good fun game.
Oh, that's a good game. That.
1 million points.
That's the that is the Paddy's Day game as well. So that'll
be Irish are going.
Irish will win that.
Saracens host Bristol.
Saracens.
Home
Saracens.
Win. Wasps host Newcastle.
Wasps.
Home
Wasps.
Win. And then this will be tasty. Exeter Chiefs host Leicester Tigers.
That will
on
be tasty.
Sunday.
Leicester have all of a sudden lost quite a few games, haven't they? So you've got Sale, you've got Wasps, you've got Saracens. Potentially,
they've got enough of a buffer. They won't rush. They won't rush the players back, even if they could pick them, which I don't think they can.
No, the mandatory rest period.
Yeah, it does depend. So, like George Ford, I think will be available.
Yeah,
but others will not. Genge, for example, will not be available. Genge should not be playing.
I play him.
He'd want to play.
I play him. I pay his bloody wages.
I can't see past Leicester.
I'm similar. I mean, Hogg will be playing. Hoggy.
Yeah. I don't know. I have betted against Exeter before, and it's gone terribly for me. You just don't know.
Exeter have to win.
Yeah.
Because the ball is not in their court. It's outside of their control.
They're already snookered, aren't they? They're looking for favours from elsewhere now.
Well,
we're getting very close.
It's Gloucester,
to it.
Yeah. They're currently sitting in fourth, but Gloucester are 2 points behind them, and Gloucester have a game in hand.
Yeah.
So it is out of their control. But if they win this, it's a big step towards it.
So many teams in the Premiership that I like. I just said I hope Gloucester do it, but I also really like Exeter. Difficult one.
And then I think the other three. So Quins are then 7 points ahead of Exeter, Saracens are 1 point ahead of them, and Tigers are 12 points ahead of Saracens. So I think the top three are cemented. It's just who joins them.
Who are the top three?
Tigers, Saracens, Quins.
Yeah,
okay. They're all far enough ahead.
God, this is doesn't matter. I know only four teams can make the playoffs, but it is an absolute disaster for Sale. It's a monumental disaster.
Sale could make it because they're only 2 points behind Gloucester.
Yeah, but it's going to be a disaster for two of those three teams. So
it will. Gloucester, so if Exeter don't make Sale. The top four, that is a disaster.
Pre-season, it will be a disaster for Gloucester now because they look like they'd cemented their place in the way that Quins are now looking like they've cemented their place. But actually, if we'd have started the season and said to Gloucester, oh, you're going to finish fifth, they'd kind of go, well, that's a bit disappointing we missed out, but that's decent. That's a step on.
Gloucester and London Irish, who are Irish, are currently in sixth. It'd be the same.
Irish are going to hunt. Are in the hunt too. So, like, if Irish don't get in the top four, no one.
They'll be fine because the trajectory is right. Same with Gloucester, but Sale, the trajectory is down.
Yeah,
Chiefs, the trajectory is very much down. If they don't make it,
I wonder if Steve Diamond will be a little bit like that 70s team. Is it the 70s Miami Dolphins team?
The Dan Marino in the 80s.
No, the one. The only team that went unbeaten with Mercury Morris as running back.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
good knowledge.
Yeah, so the joke is that there's this Miami team, because they're the only ever team to go undefeated and then win the Super Bowl. Every time the unbeaten team loses, they all have a party. So I wonder if there'll be a bit of Steve Diamond's like, well, if they don't make the playoffs again this year, you know, it's one of those things. So there'll always be The knock was Dimes couldn't get sale to the playoffs. So I wonder if there'll be a little bit of a schadenfreude there.
Sanderson did get them to the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's COVID year. Does it count? I really mean that. Did that season
it
really
counted
count?
The year before when they were partying in student halls in Manchester and that kept them out of the playoffs?
Yeah. They had 26 players all test positive.
Yeah, all partying in student Diggs. Joke, obviously.
Of course it's a joke. They did not do that.
They did not do that.
Probably didn't do it.
Yeah, it's...
Probably not all of them did it.
And also, it's interesting to see how good are that Sale team? I mean, they are very, very good. Everyone's good. But you need the extra 5% from the coaching team to get you to where you need to be. So, I guess criticism was, well, Dimes doesn't have that extra 10% to get him to the playoffs. He misses out because of that Worcester year. Next year, he goes. Sanderson comes in halfway through-ish, 10 games in, I
January,
think.
He came in.
Yeah. Gets to the playoffs, but now have they reverted back to what they were previously, which is, you know, fifth, sixth?
All to play for. Big weekend of games.
I love the Premiership.
Big weekend of games.
Yeah. Yes. Well, let's hope that they do get top four.
Yeah. Right. Nice one.
Good stuff.
There you go. All the normal stuff. Subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. Support us, patreon.com/eggchasers. Email us, contact@eggchasers@gmail.com. There were some domestic-based emails that I didn't get to because I was thinking we had a MWDP.
Maybe we'll touch on some of them next week.
I apologise and I will get to them. Thank you very much to those emails. Do you know what? I'm going to mention Tosh Wilcox because this just speaks to the calibre of our listeners.
Yes, please.
You'll love this. Hi, Tim, Phil and JB. I've been listening for a while and I just... Oh, no, I'm not going to say that. Positive stuff. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's beneath us.
He says, around the Lions tour last year, there was a podcast where you were talking about the kicking coaches and one of you suggested, instead of a kicking coach, why don't players have their own personal kicking caddy?
Oh, okay.
That was JB. Well, I've been thinking about this sort of thing for a while as well. Specifically, where the best place to kick a conversion from is. And it turns out there's been a lot of research and papers written about the mathematics of rugby conversion kicking.
Mm. Wow.
Which I thought might appeal to Phil.
Yes.
It's pretty interesting stuff. I majored in mathematics. I'm assuming that means, Tosh, you're American. One of our American listeners. Good to have you on board. He says, I majored in mathematics in college and I'm an amateur app developer. So I decided to make an app called Rugby Kicking Caddy. The app calculates where on the field you should aim when kicking for touch after a penalty and how far back you should move the ball when kicking a conversion to maximise your angle towards the goalposts and therefore maximise your margin of error and your chance of making the kick. The app is called Rugby Kicking Caddy. I think it'd be useful for kickers who already have a high success percentage and want to get a little bit better. So he said, here's how I see it working. After a try has been scored, someone brings a tee out for the kicker. The person will know of the kicker's range and will have the app on their phone. So instead of handing the player the tee and letting them decide where to put it, they will just set the tee down in the optimal location and let the kicker kick from that spot. And he sent us a link to the app, which is in the App Store. Rugby Kicking Caddy. There you go.
Yeah, so,
and that's all off an off-the-cuff conversation on the podcast,
there
JB.
There we go. Well, I imagine this will be destined to... The scrap heap of brilliant rugby ideas that should be game-changing, but never, for whatever reason, because rugby is a little bit backwards, was not embraced properly. It'll be there with the stick mitts.
Yeah. The grip tips.
The grip, yep. The
sippers grip tips.
Sippers grip tips. The eliminated knock-on.
The Weybridge.
The Weybridge.
Weybridge, yeah.
I mean, we've got so many of these things.
The forward eights.
Yeah, yeah, rugby eights. Yeah, rugby eights.
Is there going to be 9 players on each team because of a scrum half?
Good question.
Do you just play with 8?
Yeah, good question. Well,
we'll flesh that out
before I take it to BT Sport. Oh yeah, the idea I'll take to BT Sport because this one is because the CrossFit thing, the C word, is I did a workout with a guy on Friday night, and he coaches footballers, and we just got chatting and stuff, and we're like pre-season, each player puts forward 3 players,
yeah,
and they could go for a strength guy, an endurance guy, and someone who's kind of balanced, or they could just go for 3 sort of balanced players, and you just have 3 guys from each club representing them, and it's kind of a combine. That's what we were talking about, because this guy plays American football, and it's kind of in between an NFL combine and a CrossFit Games as a kind of test of rugby players, 3 guys representing each club in a Premiership thing.
Do you know what the activities are going to be when you select the guys, or do you just select hoping for the best?
I think you would have a good idea of the kind of thing it would be. It would be a bit like world's strongest man, but you wouldn't. Yeah. It wouldn't be specific. You'd know that there would be elements of strength, endurance,
and
athleticism, gymnastic ability, or all of that sort of thing. And then you get them like one rep max deadlift in a 10-minute window could be one of the activities.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And then you do you've got a 800-meter run followed by whatever it would be. But almost I'd prefer to watch that than one of the sevens tournaments that happens in pre-season.
JB's Rugby 8 is going to dominate sevens tournaments.
And it's going to be that as well. Either the Rugby 8s or both. The shareable content from that as well, because you'd get these little shareable clips, would be excellent.
So I feel like I should tell you about Jerry's Rugby 8s now, but what would we do for the patrons?
Yeah, save that. Because this is the end of a long podcast and some people might have missed it. That needs pride of place on another podcast.
Absolutely.
At another time.
It does. Yeah, so interesting CrossFit story. I work out with an English football player.
What?
A current English international footballer who plays for Man City goes to my gym.
Is... Hold on. This is going to be...
Women's football.
It is.
Yeah.
Karen Bardsley. He's really quite cool.
I
got a lot of interesting things to say about
someone came
all sorts of sport, actually.
Someone came to CrossFit a while back, and they haven't been back since. They were just... And it was a Sale Sharks and Ireland rugby player.
Mm.
Can I...
Women's rugby player.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they only came for a couple of weeks because they were then going back to the training. They just wanted something to do for a couple of weeks. She was quite impressive.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there you go. Right, enough.
Right, let the boys play.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.